So, welcome, Brenda, today. I just wanted to meet you again because the last time we spoke, it was so inspiring. What you do, you have a mission to raise women's voices and get people heard. And that is a very powerful thing and much needed thing in the world today. And so I just wanted to take a moment out to ask you a few questions about that. And I think I'd like to start at the beginning, if that's okay.
Anywhere you want to start, I'll follow along, trust me.
So, how did you get started in what I understand to be your niche? But I'll let you explain what it is and how you got started.
Well, my niche is I help women entrepreneurs hire me to help them to have greater impact, influence, and income by becoming good public speakers, learning the craft of delivering their story, delivering their message to their niche, and knowing how to make an offer and then how to have people say yes to you. I mean, that is the big want we all have, right? Is to be known, liked, and trusted enough for people to say, yes, I want to know more. And so my work is to help people really learn what it is to stand in their authenticity, their vulnerability, and the truth of who they want to be, using their dreams, their voice, their passion to help change the world so that we can make the world a place where we all kind of want to live, because there's some things happening that aren't so good, as we well know. And so our time now is for women to stand and represent themselves and to represent the values that we hold dearly in order to create a world that children can grow up in and be safe in. All people can grow up and be safe in. We're not there yet, but the more we call out and use our voice to as part of our vote, as part of our message, as part of building our own business, as part of building our own economy. I think it's really important for women to have an understanding of their own economy, and their own economy often comes in the form of bartering and sharing and trading and asking for more and receiving more and standing in the value of what they have put good time and effort in on. And of course, we've been told that we don't matter so much that we actually believed it. And some part of us still believe it, and that is the part that I'm interested in changing, because without the women changing the world is not going to be here as long as it could be. And Mother Earth will just hiccup us out anyway. I'm not, it's like, in the scheme of things, the joke is that we think we have power. The real issue is that Mother Earth will just be tired of our shenanigans and then go, yeah, a little storm here, a little volcano here, a little tidal wave there, and we're gone. We're out of here. And so, what can we do in the moment to be in harmony and responsibility to the quality of life that supports the best for everybody, not just for me, not just for my household, but for my community and for the world. Hold on, that's what I'm interested in, this larger view of respect and equality.
Yeah, the bigger picture. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
I love what you said about Mother Earth. That's so true today. We don't pay quite attention to what the messages we're getting from Mother Earth are. And it's like, wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about how you got started in public
Well,
speaking.
I'm glad you asked that, because I was having us, because you texted me this morning, and I'm like, well, where did I get started with this? First of all,
Yeah.
kind of where I got started was I'm dyslexic. And so when I first started in school, reading and writing and spelling and all that was really hard for me. So, being a creative and knowing that I'm a survivor, I started to do workarounds. And so I found all kinds of ways to be actively engaged with things that weren't really academically inclined. And one of the ways I did that was in high school. I actually really started my public speaking when I became the president of a group called Allied Youth, which was for educating people on drug and alcohol use and abuse. And so that brought me to be a provincial leader, and then it led into all kinds of other things. But that's where I started, was really rallying people and recognizing the power of my words. So I really became very aware of the responsibility of how much words matter and how we use them, and how our emotional intelligence are part of how we use them. And so it led me, I went to Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, where I graduated in a degree in communications, which is now kind of what you would call branding. And right after graduation, I joined up with a part of the second wave of the feminist movement. And so that was where I really took wings in terms of finding my voice. One of the first things I did when I went to my first women's center was joined in a women's encounter group, which we sat on the floor and talk story, right? That was back in the early 70s, and that has not changed. Women still need to talk story and need to share their story. And I mean, as you saw in this last, what, 2 years, 3 years, the Me Too movement, right? When you think about that, when you think about how many women have been holding on to the shame and the guilt and the pain of not being able to speak to how they're being abused, right? To me, that's an important element of why we as women need to create a safe and sacred space for each other, and hold sacred space for each of us to tell our story, so that we can, one, take the story and use it as an empowerment element, but two, not feel the shame and guilt of not being allowed to actually speak to what's happening to us. What a great in-service it is. It's a disservice to all human beings to not be able to tell the truth about what their experience is and believed and be believed. Now, lots of different things happen with that, as we well know, power over and way people use power. But until we can actually dig into ownership of our own story, it's pretty hard to stand in an empowered place.
Oh, yes, that's so powerful. And what you said about the power of words and speaking forth is interesting. How you got started in high school. I also started my public speaking in high school, and you said that it was your passion. It sounds like it was your passion that drove you. You weren't thinking about the speaking. You were just really passionate about this cause. And then you became the president of this organization, and then you just started speaking out and rallying people. And tell me more about this women's group that you said sat on the floor.
It was this little, was it actually the first women's center I went to? It was actually in the throes of shutting down, but there was about 10 of us, in the like 1972, if you don't mind, across from where I lived. And we basically started this to just share what was going on. And I had just kind of graduated and started a job in a corporate world where I was being treated like a piece of shit. I had one of the award-winning portfolios graduating. I was tops in my class. I go into a corporate environment and I'm a piece of shit, right? Being
A
made,
lot of us can relate.
tits and ass jokes, just inappropriate behavior, belittling, not taking any of my ideas seriously, but yet ha using them, using them anyway, but taking credit, other men taking credit for my ideas. And it was just a kind of, I was so disheartened, because in college I had amazing male instructors who were so empowering for me. And then to get into the corporate world, no voice, no say, no money, no rights, right? So I found it amazingly difficult, and I left the I was in I was working for one of the top advertising agencies in the city I lived in, and I just couldn't I couldn't I couldn't stand it. It's just like, I'm a full conceptual designer, right? I know how to take something from the beginning seed to its end actual production. That's what I was trained in. And so they would give me these little projects of designing a logo. So who's it for? Well, you don't need to know that. You just need to design a logo. It's like, well, that's not how my creative process works. And to have no information and just, well, just come up with a logo and tell them how it's going to work. It's like, I need to talk to the client. I need to know what their objectives are. I need to know who they're marketing to. I need to know, it's not a color issue. It's not a, Nike was paying $1 million for a logo, right? You know, that little click that Nike's so famous for. I mean, they actually tried to rip that off of a graphic designer and pay her $50, right? And she took them to court. Yes, right. But see, that's the kind of stuff, that kind of ripping off of people with lesser power and taking their ideas and then using them to make millions and millions and millions of dollars on the backs of people who they're only willing to pay $50 for a logo to, right? It's like, give me a break. Anyway, so my journey has been one of, like, I left the corporate world, struggled to earn a living because, men weren't hiring. They were like, well, do you design in pink? I said, have you looked at my portfolio? Could you look at this? Could you hear what I'm saying? So absolute frustration. And then I was working with this guy. His name was John Harrison. He was a little nymph. He was a trickster in a lot of ways, but he had a power to him. He believed so much in his own ability, and he taught me how to do that. But he handed me this book, that was the Red Book, and it was the feminist guide to what was happening in the United States. I was living in Canada at the time, and I read it, and I went, this is what I'm looking for. And that's when I somehow, and I don't know how I did this, beyond the Women's Center, which had closed down, we were rallying in different parts of the city, building relationships. And so that's when I stepped into the women's movement, and that's where I took my degree, my communications degree, and used it to help promote women academics who were writing material. But at this level, right, they were talking to each other. They were trying to talk to others, but they weren't getting there. And so I got in the mix with a whole bunch of academics, and basically helped them to design the language and the visuals for educational material around, how to form a union, how to create a collective, how to do consensus building making. I mean, at all these educational, what it is to be a feminist, what are we looking for? What are we trying to do? What are the things that we're trying to change? And so I got to work with them in all of the things that they were doing, so that's how I earned a living. And we opened up.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot. It was a lot. I mean, it was, when you find your tribe, right? When you find, like, when you come home, you know it, right? Uh-huh. You've ever come home and you went, oh, these are what I'm looking for. This is what I'm looking for. And so 16 years of working in the women's movement, and doing all kinds of great things, all kinds of actions, all kinds of civil disobedience, all kinds of stuff, and all kinds of growth, and started a women's newspaper called Pandora, and which just recently actually got closed down because of interesting issues. And then a women's housing co-op, and then the Women's Center. So I was involved with a lot of fundamental ways that we were building communications, and we were building safe housing and a safe way for women to build their lives. And what I was discovering in that journey was after a period of time, I started to notice how we didn't have the emotional intelligence skills. And that was back in the 80s, right? So we're talking, between 72 and 80 something, 86 is when I left. So we had all that time where we were working on all these things. And what I started to recognize was that we were still pointing the finger at others and saying, if only they'd change, my life would be different. And I really, really felt the the disempowered notion of that, right? Because if you're expecting somebody else to change for you when there's no motivation for that to happen, that's not going to happen. So what motivation do we need to have in order to change our lives and to be responsible? Because we'll still be in the victim position until we do that. And so I really started to really be in the inquiry, like, what tools do we need for this to be different? Because I was already doing conflict resolution and mediation for all my organizations. I love conflict resolution and mediation, by the way, you know, because so often we're on the same page. We're just, you know, hearing through different filters. And I was one of my gifts. I could see where the sameness existed and I could see where the stuckness was, and I could walk them through unlocking the stuckness. And, you know, and so I was like, okay, something has to be different. And so I had a personal medical thing, and I ended up going to Vancouver, BC for recovery, meeting up with a dear friend of mine who wanted us to go somewhere and study together. And she handed me this catalog from a place called Heartwood Institute. And on the front cover is their logo and the lodge. And on the inside cover, when I opened it up, there's this woman sitting in a field holding a baby fawn. And I looked at that picture and I went, I want that.
You mean as your life?
I want that. I want to be that gentle and that connected and that sourced in nature, that a fawn would sit with me, and that would be how I show up in the world, that I'm a safe place for things to show up.
Safe place for things to show up.
Safe place. And so it's like, okay, how am I going to make that happen? And within 3 months, I was actually at their doorstep, starting a new career. And this time it was in transformational coaching. And my first day there, I went to my first sweat. The Lakota man was doing, not Lakota, Arapaho Cheyenne. Rutherford was Arapaho Cheyenne. I didn't know what a sweat was.
Physical sweat, or
no, the kind of a Native sweat? American sweat. The you know, the Anipi.
Oh, the teepee.
The teepee. That was where the prayer meetings happened. But the sweats are in a turtle shape. So they get willows, they bend them, and then they cover them with, there's a whole process for building a lodge, which I'm really efficient at, by the way, building a lodge and going in and bringing hot stones in and pouring water on them and praying. And it was my first one. And it was for a man by the name of Dakari who was suffering from bone cancer. And they did 7 healing sweats with him, and I went to every one of them. And then they did prayer meetings for him as well. And so I went to those as well. And so I got totally entrenched in the Native American tradition. And as part of that, I fell in love with drums and listening to the drum and the power of drums. And so for the last 35 years, I've been teaching women how to make handheld trance drums for
that
as an empowerment.
You said you had to go off to a drum meeting. Now, what state was this HOPE organization in?
California is where a Heartwood Institute was. Heartwood Institute's in the northern mountains of California. They have since changed their objectives and their missions. They're no longer a healing arts school. They sold many years back now, but I got to be the operations manager there for almost 10 years. Where I got to actually take my feminist viewpoint and my work as a community organizer and the new work that I was getting from my 5 years of study at Heartwood and incorporate them into community communication skills. And so I actually put together a course on how to live in community and how to communicate and how to facilitate and how to mediate and how to do all of that stuff. And so I got to actually take a living process, 240 acres of land, 150 people, day in and day out, and teach them how to be effective communicators and responsible communicators. And the organization flourished from that. So it's not what we call this. It's not It's not something you read in a book. It's actually something you do in live and in person. And so everybody got to really embrace and embody how to be empowered through using their voice for effective communications.
Yeah, effective communication and the leadership go hand in hand.
And to be empowered, right? And to so you know, we worked hard on the staff manual, of course, and because there was so many bad practices, is really what they hired me for, was to be able to help them align their mission statement with their personal actions. Because the two people who had bought the school after it had been functioning for, I don't know, 16 years and struggling, they were in from Chicago. And they were Chicago businessmen dropping into a hippie commune, and like they were totally a fish out of water. So I was respected because I was a student, and I was well known, and doing things that I do, helping people.
And any of your students kind of go off to do different things that you know of or
Oh
anything?
yeah, they're all over. I mean, I got an email. I had been promoting the drum making workshop couple years ago, and I got a Facebook message from somebody in Africa who said, "I have my drum with me, and I've had it for 15 years. It's one of the most empowering tools that I use in the work that I do here." And so all of these things matter, right? Where people they're touched by something and then take it into how they use it to empower their work. And that's really what I'm about anyway. It's not about my work. It's about what can I do to help you tap into what is most effective and lights your passion up and is something that you really want to stand for. And as we spoke earlier, speaking is not about speaking because you can. You when you're passionate about what you're doing, there's a compelling nature to needing to speak to that and lean into it, and that is a driving force. So it's not about the speaking any longer. It's about who can I serve and how can I benefit them,
Love the message,
because I'm showing up to let them know I'm here and I can help them through that pain, whatever that is, to get the results they're looking for. And that to me is compelling.
And how do you bridge that? How do you bridge the drum and the vocal communication?
I think
Understanding.
always our communications needs to be coming from a sense of our own center and our own awareness, right? So the more we're tapped into presencing our own truth and our own, so what the drum does is it helps you drop down past the conscious mind and into that place where the voice of your purpose can speak to you. And when you can tap into that voice, helping you to make your decisions and help you to understand that you're on the right path, or that you have choices, right? When you can tap into that deeper knowing, right, and the beingness of that knowing, then what you do, then what happens from there is I'm looking for a couple words and they don't work.
Phenomenal, magical.
Well, it's definitely magical, but it's also decisions made from passionate desire versus
Confidence is in knowing.
confidence is in knowing. And so that's where I bridge the gap, is because not everybody does drum making with me or anything like that, but those who do use it to empower their voice and to empower their sense of place and their sense of belonging. Because when you drop in at that deeper level of awareness of self, you now know how to hold yourself in integrity with the words that you're using. And that's an important piece to me, because my core values are self-expression, creativity, and freedom. And honesty, those are top core values for me. So honesty being one of the key pieces, which drives most people nuts when they work with me, because I don't hold back on telling them what I'm feeling or seeing, never because I'm trying to have power, but because they've hired me to help them to become better, to become more who they want to be. And to do that, there has to be a truth to that supersedes anything else. And of course, you build up that trust, you build up the relationship, you build up a sense of safety for people so that they can hear, what it is that they've not been willing to hear up until that point.
Oh, okay. So not what only what they're putting out, but what they need to hear. And you're saying hear, which you mean, are you talking about coming from inside or intuitive voice or?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole piece, right? It's the inner work that changes the outer reality. We know this, but often we don't know how to translate what the inner experience is in a way that helps us to change what we're doing. And so that is the work that has become, that's what transformational work is, right? Change is an inside job. And when we change our sense of, which is why the storytelling, which is why I opened up with that storytelling, because storytelling is a powerful way to become aware of the story we're telling and the story that we need to change to be telling. There's always another story to tell, and then always another perspective to that
That's
story.
an interesting perspective because people always think of storytelling as telling what happened in the past. Very few talk about what making that story, making the next chapter of your life through
Right.
storytelling. Wow.
Right. Because everything, here's there in my viewpoint, there are no mistakes, right? Nothing happens to you because it just happened. I mean, some things are random. Yes, we know that. But the reality is how we choose to look at it becomes part of our perspective. It becomes part of our ability to empower ourselves. So learning how to take a story and recognize that, yes, this happened and I didn't have choice over it there, but what happened since? Oh, first of all, I survived. Second of all, I'm aware when people are in certain kinds of energies. Third, I know that I need to be taking better care of myself. Three, I don't walk down dark alleys without by myself anymore. Or I leave people earlier when I notice that they're narcissistic or they're abusive or whatever. It's no longer that I have to stay for love when I'm not getting loved in truth, right? So how do we do the inner awareness piece that lets us stand into a greater power empowerment of the story we're choosing to tell?
Awareness of the energy before the actions take place so that you can bring yourself to a place of safety.
Yeah. Right. And the
And
more
put up those boundaries. Boundaries are key.
boundaries are key, and we have trouble, with boundaries because we don't hurt somebody's feelings. But I think that that is kind of like that is part of the unwinding of the training, right? Is to get to where it actually to create healthy relationships, we have to have healthy boundaries. To have healthy boundaries, we have to know ourselves. We have to know what's right and wrong for us. We have to be able to tap into our intuition and listen to, when things start to, when flags come up when you're having a conversation or when you notice certain kinds of abusive language or off-color jokes. That might not be the right language in this state of mind, but there are these jokes that are just like, that's not funny. That's abusive towards, and so how do you step up and step into saying, hey, I'm not interested in that kind of conversation. And I've set that boundary a lot. People I love dearly who wanted to stay in the victim position. It's like, I'm more than willing to hold space for you. And the minute that you got something new to tell me, this is the 10th time I heard that story. The boundary now is when you've got something new or new perspective on that story, I'm more than willing to show up for listening. But until then, I don't want to hear the same one looped around again. Go deeper. Listen deeper. Ask more questions. And the power is in the question, and it's always in the question. And I don't know about you, but I haven't, I'm just learning how powerful the right question is.
Questioning is yes,
Yeah.
yes, 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 yes.
Right.
And I think questioning's really hit home for me at the beginning of this year, which has flown by 2022, or maybe it was the beginning of 2021, because the years are starting to fly faster, it seems, since
Yeah.
2021. And asking the question, I started with asking, how am I feeling on a regular basis? Because I was not aware of how I was feeling. I could be feeling uncomfortable, I could be feeling stressed, I might even be feeling joy. But I was so focused on what had to be done next that I never took the time to give myself space and say, okay, this doesn't feel good. I need to stop.
Yeah. But that's where the power lies. Yeah, but that's where the power lies. That's part of the tools with Mary Morrissey, is noticing what you're noticing. Now, you know, as a transformational coach and a breath therapist and a clinical hypnotherapist, I'm really aware that the emotions and the feelings are all part of it. But how do we translate what we're feeling into a different choice? And so that's why it's important to notice what we're noticing, for one, but then to notice whether it's a longing or a discontent. And then the third step, is this making me happy or is this making me miserable? What's going on here? And then to make the next step, which is kind of what would I love, right? So when you step into what would I love, you're stepping into how do I now choose a path that is more invigorating for me, more alive. More fun, more aliveness for me, right? And you know, because
we've been for kids, we can have fun too.
Well, yeah. What are you thinking? That ain't fun. I ain't playing. It ain't no good there, you know. But that's part of where we give away our power, right? Is to not see that living life through joy. And happiness is a choice we can make, and that we can succeed. In joy and happiness. It doesn't that we don't have to wait until we're retired to go have a vacation, or wait until we've got X amount of money in the bank before we can actually say, well, I can take a breath and enjoy life, right? Yes. We don't know what life's going to offer at any given moment. And so if we're waiting to retire, or we're waiting for something to be different in order for us to step into our lives, my thing to you is like, what are you waiting for? It's never going to come until you choose to go there.
And what I'm relishing now and enjoying is this new mindset that our existence and our purpose is to exist and love existing.
Yeah.
From the old mindset, whereas when I have this, and this accomplished, then my existence is validated. Then yeah. I can start to enjoy life. It's no.
But that's the shift that we're making in consciousness, right? It's not down the road. It's right here and now in the present moment. You know, today's the gift that we get to be present for today, this moment, this moment that you and I have to connect and enjoy each other and to find value in our conversation. This is the moment we get. And so I want to play in that as being part of what makes my day happen in the best possible way. Yes. I wanted to tell you a little bit more about my Raise Your Voice Speakers Club before we get, because we can go down a lot of rabbit holes with me.
But I will say one more thing about the questioning. When you put the questions out there, the answer comes back to you. Maybe not, I always say not that day, not that week, but the answer will come back to you. And it's just knowing that process of allowing the space.
Allowing, yeah. And also, you know, asking the question, not in the state of the problem, but in the state of the solution, right? How do we ask the question that is geared towards the solution versus staying stuck in the vibration of the problem, right? How do we do that? And that, to me, is the fun part of the consciousness that we're in right now.
All right. So tell us about your program.
Well, you know, the reason I started the program was because I was asking Spirit for guidance on how do I become effective at what I need to do. And I never saw myself as a speaker's coach. That was not on my radar until a program I was operating didn't want to rise. And I was like, okay, Creator, you got something in mind for me. Now I'm asking you, what is it? Show me the way. Because I know you've got a plan, and I would like to hear it so I can hear it, not just allude to it. Tell me where you want me to go. And so 2 days later, I went out to a networking thing, and all these women who I love, you know, I've been hanging out with for a long time, about 70 women in the room, and half of them were saying, I don't know what to say about my introduction. I really hate public speaking. I'm too nervous to speak. And I was like, I went, damn, I can help with that one. That one I can help with. And so I basically said, okay, that was the guidance, I'm going to follow it. So that's 4 years ago, that's when I started the Raise Your Voice, because I actually started out as the Be Bold, Be Brave, Be Powerful Speakers Club. And since then, it's turned to Raise Your Voice Speakers Club, to be bold, to be brave, to be powerful. And its whole purpose is to create a safe and sacred place where women can come and learn what their voice is. Because until you have a chance to experiment and explore and discover, you do not know what your true voice is. Now, me, I'm always experimenting and exploring, and I don't care about falling on my face, because if I'm falling on my face, I'm actually falling forward, right? So failure is
the way you learn.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, that's not a basis. So because I've been an entrepreneur for a long time, like close to 40 years, because I've been doing the emotional intelligence work, you know, the advocacy for personal growth work for 35, and then I've been doing speaking. And when I came to Portland, one of the first things I did, because I had spent the previous 12 years in hermit land buying properties and renovating them all by myself. It was a very, you know, me and my partner, that's what we were doing. And I was taking a rest from running a community of 150 people for 10 years. So I stepped back, went into hermit land. And so I stepped into, when I came to Portland, I said, one of the first things I did was I joined Toastmasters, because I knew that I couldn't be a hermit and function as a successful entrepreneur. I needed to change my approach. And so one of the first things I did was that I found an absolutely, I was so blessed to find the right Toastmasters club for me. They were actually in walking distance, which is one of the reasons I chose it. But my mentor there was an amazing man. He was 80.
They had mentors.
Yeah, well, he was the president of the club at the time, Dick Morse, and he's since passed. But he was an amazing man who took me under his wing. And so during my 7 or 8 years in Toastmasters, I won lots of prizes and stuff like that, and you know, and got acknowledged for what I was doing. But they didn't teach the fundamentals of speaking to sell. Right.
Right. No, that's not the
case. They'll show you how to make a business out of it. So I went into then, because I love speaking, and I saw, and one of my first coaches, that's what she says, you're born to speak. You're a natural born storyteller. You know, I know that to be part of my, you know, my charisma, especially when I turn it on, you know, is that I can reach people in ways that a lot of people can't.
Okay.
And that's my time in with being dyslexic and working in the feminist movement and working, you know, working in all these different places that I've worked in the community, that I have this ability to tap into that innate light that shines in everybody.
So what does the program look like now?
The program is wonderfully developing, and it's been a lovely 4 years. So it's a minimum of 6 months. And we meet four times a month for an hour and a half, essentially. And then people get to learn the art of speaking and be and make presentations and be evaluated and get feedback, and then come back and do another presentation with the feedback, and they build up an embodiment of their message. And it also has a structure that helps them to understand where their story fits in that. You know, how to make an offer, you know, what kinds of offers, you know, how to construct their program so that it's speaking to the things that their ideal client are looking for. You know, how to do the craft of speaking, because it's one thing to write something, it's another thing to be on stage presenting it. And then to develop your own style, and know when to use, you know, gathering questions and humor and statistics and slides. There's so many ways to engage an audience that helps them to know, like, and trust you. And I see a lot of speakers who do not know how to engage the audience. They're there for their purpose, which is that's what they're doing.
But nerves can be a part of that too. Yeah.
Yeah, but my yeah, absolutely. But my emphasis is on, of course, I'm working with women who usually are heartfelt people who are looking to show up authentically, but
Mm-hmm.
also for them to develop their personality in such a way that they're true to themselves and the message that they want. And so that's the fun part, right? Is that we all get to be true to ourselves.
And the name of the program?
Is the Raise Your Voice Speakers Club.
All right.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's done online at this point. And, you know, I've got a workshop coming up that's going to be in person in a couple of weeks on three keys to rock your keynote. And I'm excited about it because we're basically, it'll be the first time I've done something in person in a while.
Yes.
I
know what that must feel like, missing the stage and missing getting out and being on the platform. So.
But it's that ability to take over a 2-day period will take their sense of where they want to go and we'll break it down into chunks that they'll be able to create the stories, create the program, you know, have lots, you know what their niche is, and have lots of ability to kind of use what they're writing on those 2 days to be part of their social media campaign, right? Part of their Instagram work, part of their blogging, right? Because what they'll get to do is really dig down deep and really own their passionate why. Look at kind of like the storytelling arc that needs to be involved. And I love Sage's storytelling arc. That, I mean, I've been as part of Toastmasters, I spent 2 years in a storytelling club, just telling stories. And so all kinds of storytelling arcs, but theirs I love because it turns it into what's the way that it turns back onto your experience relating to your client's experience, right? So there's that depth of why you tell a story and its purpose within your
client. Yeah, the key points. Yeah.
Right. And so I love that. And you know, I was doing that in another format, but I just love their story arc. Their mountain, climbing the mountain piece.
Yeah.
And then the third part is it's really about kind of like being able to really identify the pain points of your clients and then what are the results that you're getting and how can you make that, turn that into something that excites them about the potential that they have when they get to work with you.
Fantastic. So when is the next workshop?
The next workshop is the 18th and 19th of November. It's going to be in the Portland area, but I'm hoping that I'll actually bring it to an online presentation. I want to deliver it in person first, just because I'm wanting an in-person opportunity, and I've got about 6 or 8 people who are all part of my program in some way who are going to be part of it. And then, you know, so that'll be just a nice kind of, you know, 8 to 12 people that I'll be able to spend 2 days with and watch them flourish.
Flourish. Yeah.
Well, how much fun is that?
And this is, yeah, this is fun. And this is so very, very needed in these times. And we both have a passionate for women raising their voices. And as I told you before, I have a passion especially for the multicultural and multilingual women that I've worked with in the past. And the universe has just been bringing more and more women. Before, I was working with businessmen and women, but now more and more women are coming to me and they're tired. And like you talked about the corporate situation where they are hired because they have so much skills, you know, they have this high level of skills, and then they get there in the boardroom and in the meetings and they don't want to speak up. And I just finished coaching, well, we're not finished, but I'm coaching a PhD, and she said, before I give this presentation, now she's doing this presentation that is about cellular, you know, development, and it's such a high level, it's like 90% words that even English speakers don't even know. I'm like, okay, we pronounced that, okay, that's it. And she said, before I start this presentation, because she gave me the presentation, we went over it, it was in perfect English, and she said, before I start, should I apologize for my English level? And I said, never, never. I mean, could you imagine her male colleagues doing that before presentation. I've worked with some men and they have those feelings, but when they go out there, they just boom, 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 you know, and a part of their confidence is not caring if they get it wrong or not.
Well, they don't speak to it. They care. Like they that's part of the problem with the authenticity and the
But
vulnerability part.
I mean in the sense that they're willing to take a risk rather than sit there and be quiet, because that's not even an option. So working with these women and getting them to a place where, you know what, I have a lot to say is where my heart is at. And
Yeah, we share that. That is the work that we get to do because we can. And so congratulations,
well, needs them
to
so
help
much.
that voice come to life in a way that she gets to step into her power.
Yeah, so my program is called the Find Your Unique Voice Program, and my next workshop will be Thanksgiving, the 24th to the 27th. And I'm doing it that way because maybe some people will be on vacation, but I uniquely want to reach out to people in other countries who are not celebrating Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, yeah.
Maybe they have the day off because their American conglomerate is, you know, giving them the day off. And I have a heart for these women. I know they're out there around the world and they have so much potential, not just in speaking, but in business, to share their product, to share their service.
Yeah.
And they are holding back because of this perceived inadequacy. So.
Well, we're drowning in the perceived inadequacy that has nothing to do with the truth of who we are, and it's and it's not even factual. If it was factual, we'd see, and this is where a lot of women, you're working with a PhD. I mean, basically, how many women have four degrees and still are trying to prove their worth, right? So we go back to the inner work, right? Because it's we can create the list of credentials, but that doesn't give us the confidence or the sense of self-worth that doing our inner work and recognizing kind of that we get to change the story, that we get to use different words about ourselves, and we get to stand for ourselves in a different way. And so you and I both know that this is an important aspect of women changing the world, is for them to be able to use their voice.
And the beauty is, we right now is such a fantastic time because we don't have to knock on corporate's door and say, "Hey, I'm wearing the best suit. I have the best resume. Will you give me a job?" We just
Yeah,
turn the
no.
camera on and say, "This is who I am, and this is what I have to offer." It's direct now, you
Well,
know.
we have the best. This is the best time in my, 50 years of working for the empowerment of women. 50 years. It's a good 50 years.
Wow.
This is the most amazing time for women to say, if not now, then when? Right? And that this is the time for us to step up. And if we don't know how to do it, great. You and I know how to help them. And we're not the only coaches out there who have some way in which we can help you find your voice and feel empowered and live to your genius and step into your wisdom and your magic. Let's if not me or not you, then who are you going to call upon to help raise you to another level of you honoring the gift of you on this planet at this time? Because to me, that's what it's really about.
Absolutely. And I want to just close on Madam C.J. Walker. Yes, I don't have the quote in mind. I've written it down somewhere. I don't have the quote in my mind right now, but we are talking about the obstacles that we had to overcome to build our business and to be heard and seen. Can you imagine? In those
No.
1930s, can you imagine? But we've done it before.
Yes, and doing and we'll be doing more and more and more and more still. I mean, we didn't have rights to getting our own credit card till 1974. I mean, when you think about it, it's like how much more we got a lot. We got distance to cover, baby, and you and I are going to help people make that journey in a way that's in integrity with the quality of life that they seek.
Okay. And then we'll stop there, and we'll stop the recording there, and just give kisses to whoever's watching.
contact us. We're more than willing to give you a support in turning into that beautiful badass that you are. That's all we can tell you. You're available.
Our passion.
You're available for your badassery. We're available to see that you do it. That's what I say.